Good morning. Once we get started, it's hard to calm down, but I am so glad that you are all here today. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it's my pleasure to welcome you to this week's edition of Thursday Morning Roundtable. A couple of announcements. As always, this is a really busy time of the year. I know, lots of things going on. I wanted to remind you, giving you a heads up about next week at TMR, E.J. McMahon of the Manhattan Institute will be talking about public pensions. You won't want to miss that one. At IRP next week, that's Thursday at noon, Robbie Farshman of SU will be talking about the Connective Corridor, which is taking shape along University Ave, and also Foreman Park on East Genesee Street. So you'll, if you're interested, you don't have to be a retired person to make that one. Let's see. Oh, in line with today's topic, education, I wanted to congratulate the Onondaga County Legislature. I wanted to congratulate the Onondaga County Public Library and the County Executive for passing the capital improvement program in the budget for the Central Library, so we'll have better access and better operations. Very forward thinking. Happy to hear about that. One more heads up. On Tuesday, October 18th, for those of you particularly who live in the city, vote in the city, Parents for Public Schools is hosting a forum. Our very own Fred Fisk is going to be moderating a forum with the candidates vying for the four seats on the Syracuse School Board. That forum is at 7 o'clock on Tuesday evening at Henninger High School. There's more information at SyracuseCitySchools.com. So, again, today we are talking about education. We are very pleased to have the new Syracuse School District Superintendent, Sharon Contreras, with us. And I will tell you a little bit about her, abbreviated vita from the website. You have the links to it on the TMR website. But Sharon Contreras is a Long Island native. She attended Binghamton University and earned master's in teaching, English literature, education administration. She was at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She's also currently completing her PhD there in educational leadership. And the superintendent is also a 2010 alum of the very prestigious Broad Superintendent's Academy. She's taught high school English. She's in Rockford, Illinois. She served as principal of an award-winning magnet school. She became assistant superintendent there for pupil services, where she has a long list of accomplishments that you can read about. In 2004, she moved to Georgia as chief academic officer of the 52,000-student Clayton County Public Schools, where she's credited with developing a rigorous K-12 curriculum, expanding AP and gifted programming, and introducing intervention for struggling students, and also increasing the high school graduation rate. Before coming to Syracuse earlier this year, Superintendent Contreras was chief academic officer for Providence, Rhode Island Public Schools, and she served as a member of the five-person team that defended that state's successful application for the Race to the Top allocation. So please join me in welcoming Superintendent Sharon Contreras.
Good morning. Thank you so much for hosting me today. Someone said to me just now, "Wow, Sharon, you're still smiling." Absolutely, but I have to admit, this morning I got up and I thought there was a piece of cotton in my hair from the blankets. I'm pulling and pulling. I said, "Oh my God, that's gray hair." But I tell you, I am loving this work, and I am just overwhelmed by the way in which the community has embraced me, accepted me, and is so willing to step up and support the work that we do in our schools. And I believe it is the most important work in the nation, and that is educating our young people. Let us begin. I'd like to talk this morning about the district's transformation plan, our transformation initiative. But I'd like to begin with just some data that I'm sure you've seen before. This is the current state of the nation with respect to the class of 2008 graduation rates. As you can see, Asian students in this nation have the highest percentage of students going on to college at 82.7%. But you see for Latino and African American students, those rates hover around 57%, and for American Indian students, 53.9%. Only about one half of students of color in this nation graduate on time. When you look at college completion rates, this is just the completion rates for associate degrees. For all Americans, about 38% of students 25 to 34 years old earned associate degrees. It decreases to 26% for African Americans, and it drops all the way to 18% for Latino Americans. And this is the current state of the Syracuse City School District. 96% of students are in underperforming schools, schools that have been designated as low performing for more than 2 years. 96% of our students are in those schools. Only 51% of Syracuse City School District high school students graduate on time. I have to say that when I first got here, I made the comment, and I'm not sure where I was, about some public meeting, that this was totally unacceptable to me. And I was just so taken aback the next day when there were people saying, how dare she say this is unacceptable? It is unacceptable when one in two of our young people do not graduate in this city. There's no way the city can sustain itself, the state can sustain itself, or the nation will maintain its reputation for the greatest democracy in the world, or as an economic power, with one in two of its students being undereducated. Only 99% of high school students met the ELA, or Math Aspirational Performance Measure. So while they are passing the regents, they are passing at very low levels. You can see the percentages there. You have to earn a 75 or greater on an ELA regent, or 80 or greater on a math regent, to meet the aspirational performance measure, and only 9% of our high school students are there. And when you look at the number of students who are scoring at the highest levels on our state assessment, it is less than 1% in ELA and only 4% in math. Finally, the average ACT score for the district is a 19. You probably know better than I that the college admissions benchmark is 20. That's the bottom that you should have. So we can do better, and I say that everywhere we go, we can do better for our young people. This is very important data, because everywhere I go, I'm hearing the poverty story, that we cannot do better because our students are so poor because of their home life. But I want you to look at this slide. There are five school districts in the state that are considered the Big Five. We make up 20% of the students in the state. We are the largest districts in the state. You will see that in both ELA and in math, Syracuse performs the worst of all of these districts. We have the same students. So when people say you can't show improvement, it's because of poverty. Why are we performing lower than our peers in the other districts in New York City, Buffalo, Rochester, and Yonkers? You will see in math, three of the districts are even showing improvement: New York City, Buffalo, and Rochester, but Syracuse and Yonkers are declining. And I cannot see those numbers. But the red is not good. Okay. So in course performance, you will see at the high school level, more than 50% of our students are failing a course. You see similar numbers at elementary and middle schools, and the red is off-track behavior. The yellow is on-track, and it looks pink to me from here. The pink indicates that those are students who are performing at the highest levels on their courses. This is extremely problematic, because if you start failing courses early, you certainly will not be on track to graduate. And this is consequently, we have a very low graduation rate. So we have to do much more to support those students when they are struggling. And we do not have those programs in our schools, adequate programming in our schools. This is algebra course performance, and I think that says something like 59% of our students cannot pass algebra. How many of you remember algebra? Do you remember it? It's not that complicated. It really isn't. We should not have 60% of our students struggling with the algebra course. As you know, algebra used to be the gatekeeper course for getting into college. It's now algebra 2. We have to make sure that students have a strong algebra foundation so that they can be successful in geometry, algebra 2, and go on to our nation's best colleges and universities. You can see all of our students, no matter what the race, are struggling with basic algebra courses. This is another area that is really disconcerting for me, and that is disciplinary actions. The red means those students were suspended at least one time during the school year. We have schools where the great majority of the students were suspended at some time during the school year. We have to come up with a better solution for how to handle students who are having behavioral problems, to send them home when they are already underperforming. And sometimes, most times, their parents are working, they're sitting home by themselves, they can get into more trouble, they often do not make up the work. It's putting those students in a position where they are even further behind. We have to come up with solutions for how to handle disciplinary problems in school and start thinking about how to build schools or build community in schools so that students feel they can go to an adult to resolve problems, that they can work together to mediate problems. I would say most of these disciplinary actions are fall within the categories of insubordination and fighting. And I think that students, if they feel there is an adult they can trust, will be able to go to someone and say, I'm having difficulty today. We have not been able to establish those kinds of caring communities in our schools, and it is certainly an area in which I solicit your assistance, expertise, and support. The good news is what we do in school districts matter. These are the national assessment scores, and you can see the difference between school districts. These are large city school districts. There's a 28% point gap between poor African American eighth graders in Los Angeles and Houston. That is equivalent to 3 years worth of learning. So what school districts do matters. We have to really embrace that you can make a significant difference with all students. You'll see this also in reading for Latino students. There is an 18-point gap between the Latino student performance in Los Angeles and in Houston. It is equivalent to almost 2 years worth of learning. If we had this data, you would see similar data between Syracuse and other large districts. So it is important that we do not embrace the theory that because they're poor, because their parents are undereducated, because they come from single parent homes, that they cannot achieve, because there are districts doing this work every day. So that gets me to what our transformation plan is in the Syracuse City School District. We've identified four key levers to transform our district, and they include high-quality teaching and learning. We are beginning to work on a teaching framework, an effective teaching framework. We will identify what great teaching looks like in our district. And it's very important that I point out, I do not blame this in any way on those in the field, because everywhere I go, I see people working very hard. But when I ask, do you know what the district expects of you? No one can tell me, because we have not told the field what we expect. We have not said what great teaching looks like. There's no definition for that in our school district. So we are working on a teaching framework. We are also working on a leadership framework. I said last night during the board meeting that I have never heard of a high-performing school that did not have an outstanding principal at the helm. So it is very important that we also identify for our leaders what effective leadership is. We'll be developing a teacher evaluation system and a building leader evaluation system. This is in part driven by new state regulations. So we are adopting one of the five rubrics that the state has put forth. However, we have task forces working on redesigning the evaluation framework so that by the end of June of 2012, we will present to the state our own standard for the evaluation system and for excellent performance. The next lever is standards of service and support, and this speaks to the quality of service schools receive from central office. Central office. I don't know what else to say about that, but they central offices are incredibly dysfunctional all over the place. And oftentimes what you see are those who are unsuccessful in schools. We don't know what to do, so we make you the boss. We bring you downtown, and you suddenly are in a position to supervise others. And I think that Syracuse has some very, very good talent at central office. However, the work has mainly surrounded compliance issues, and we are not working in tandem with one another. We're working in silos, and this is starting to change, but we have to work together to find ways in which we should support our schools, support our building leaders, and our teachers instead of making life more difficult. I'm having one-on-one meetings with principals, and I just shake my head sometimes, and they tell me, well, I got this directive from this one and this directive from another. It's hard to hold people accountable when we are giving them so many different directives and just making it very difficult to run their buildings, and thereby making it very difficult for teachers to teach every day. And I believe that's why in this nation teachers have gone into their classrooms and closed the door, because it's always something different. They always feel that they're being put upon. And I want the teachers and the schools to feel like central office is there to support them. And I am pleased that the members of my team really want the culture to change, and we are really working diligently to help the schools understand that we are there to support them. The next lever is innovation and district structure. One of the areas we are working on right now is developing an innovation zone in the Fowler Quadrant, which is on the west side. That is the lowest performing quadrant. It has the poorest children in the city attend schools there. And we believe that if given more flexibility in exchange for more accountability, that those schools will thrive. I'm working very closely with union leadership, asking them to please abandon all provisions of the contract, save wages and benefits, and asking the board to give up all board policies, save those that are legal mandates, so that those schools have some autonomy and flexibility and can thrive. And finally, curriculum and instruction programs, working to make sure we have a rigorous curriculum that prepares students for college and the workforce. I can tell you that teachers are doing the very best they can without any guidance. They are teaching from the textbooks. If they have the textbooks in the classroom, they have not been giving any professional development. I learned when I got here, there's not even a professional development unit or anyone focusing on how do we provide our teachers, our leaders, with good quality training and development so that they can do more effectively do their jobs. To get this done, we've established 7 task forces that are made up of district leaders, union leaders. In fact, the union leaders co-chair these task forces. They're made up of teachers, parents, our partners in higher education, community members, and business leaders. And one is the innovation in district structure, working on that innovation zone in the Fowler Quadrant. We have applied for a grant at the state level in the amount of $7.5 million, and we expect to hear from them within a couple of weeks, and we are hopeful that that will help us to jumpstart that zone. If the zone is successful, there's a lesson learned, and we will take that to scale. The leadership framework, again, will help us identify this community standard for effective leadership. And the leadership evaluation will be based upon that framework and will include not only professional practice, but student performance. And I am in no way afraid of that because it's based on student growth models, not just pure performance of the student. But if a student sits in our classroom all year long, we should expect, and the community does expect, that they are showing growth wherever they come in. And there's the teaching and learning framework I mentioned, where we identify what effective teaching is and then create a teacher evaluation based on that. Again, student performance will be included, as well as observations of classroom instruction and other measures of professional practice. The curriculum and instruction framework is very important. As you know, we're rolling out the National Common Core Standards. They're called Common Core State Standards. New York State has adopted them. And students will be assessed on those beginning in 2013. So we are rolling those out. They are internationally and nationally benchmarked. And there's a lot of work to be done. I will be calling on all of the universities to support us as we begin to work on every content area. And then finally, strategic compensation, moving away from a step and lane system to a compensation structure based that incentivizes high performance. What I am hopeful to do is to create an opt-in system at first. My understanding is that in Denver, about 80% of the teachers have abandoned the step and lane system to move forward to a pay-for-performance system. And again, all of these task forces are being co-chaired by a technical assistance partner. Our technical assistance partners are Mass Insight for the Innovation Zone, for the frameworks and the evaluation systems, Insight Education, and for a strategic compensation battle for kids. Three very well-known and prestigious organizations that are doing this work in large urban districts all over the country. If you are interested in any way in participating on these task forces, I do need your expertise and your assistance and welcome you. I have a staff member, a grant writer, who wrote a grant for us, and in the grant she said, these are just data, but not our destiny. And I agree with her that while we have low performance right now, we absolutely will transform the Syracuse City School District because we have outstanding leaders, we have outstanding teachers, great community support, and most of all, very talented students. And I look forward to working with you in that endeavor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We do have some questions. Paul Welsh.
Superintendent, thanks for the remarks. I was really pleased that you brought up leadership. We've seen in this community, we've had principals doing an excellent job in one school, then moved to another, then moved to the central office. And it seems to me the principals are the key link here. If they're good performers, then they'll be able to bring people together. How are you, in your framework, are you looking to redo the salary schedule so that principals are really higher paid than your central office? So there isn't that economic incentive to leave the key position and move to what I would consider a less key position and better paid.
Well, I think where I would push back is that all of the positions are key. And I think because central offices have been so dysfunctional throughout the nation, we write them off. But they are critical pieces because teachers and leaders work within a context. You have to have a functional organization in order for the schools to be successful. So you need some very good talent and different kinds of expertise at the central office level. So the new salary scales are not necessarily mean that they will be paid more than central office, but they will be paid for high performance of students. So they can ultimately have a higher salary based on the success of the students in their building.
Hello, Superintendent. Welcome to our community. I'd like to know what your opinion is on tenure. Something that I know a lot of my staff would like to have.
Oh, I do think that it is very difficult to hire and place and keep the best teachers when you have such draconian tenure rules in the state. And we have lost so many great teachers because how a teacher, an administrator, in fact, anyone in the district, which is different in New York State because that's not true in all states, maintains their job is not based on performance. It is based on seniority alone. So I think seniority protections are important, but I do not believe that it outweighs one the individual's performance. So I do think there is room for tenure reform in this state.
Ms. Contreras, could you tell me why I don't see in any place there the word parent? I think that there's no indication from what you had to say that you're showing the proper concern for parents as part of the situation. I think, in my experience, it is probably more important than a great many of the other things you're talking about because it stems from the parents.
I need to understand you're saying parent involvement or holding parents accountable. What are you asking me specifically?
Involvement. With the central office, probably.
Oh, absolutely. Parent involvement is critical. I believe we must inform, involve, and empower the parents. The parents are sitting on every one of these task forces. I have been out spending most of my time, I would say, in the community at parent meetings in their homes, and the parents have been very welcoming. So I believe that in order to have good parent involvement, the schools have to become more welcoming of the parents. And I think it is amazing. I wish I was a sociologist and had time to write a book. Listening to the parents about their different experiences in the schools. I can go to two parent chats, and generally they are segregated by race. Most of the parent chats, I can go to a parent chat, and I'll just do a school, Corcoran, and one will be white, one will be black, and they have had two totally different experiences in the schools. We have to do a better job of engaging all parents and thinking about different ways in which to engage them, because if we think that just bringing them in for the PTO meeting is the most important way or the only way to engage them, we have failed already. But I do want to say Marva Collins, and many of you may know her for her work. She's an educator out of Chicago who has been very successful for many years. Her schools sit right in the housing developments. Once told me, public education cannot depend on parent involvement to be successful. So while I want that public, that parent involvement, we have to be successful even if we do not have it, and we have to be the advocates for children even when their parents cannot or will not come forward. So we are working to engage parents, but we are going to have to be successful whether they show up or not.
I have a question about budget. I'm an involved parent with two children currently in the system, and I think it's important for the public to know what budget cuts look like, because when you look in the newspaper, you just see these figures, 450 personnel laid off. But for my family, what it's meant is that my daughter is in a kindergarten class of 26 when my two sons were in classrooms of under 20. And my son this year in sixth grade and is in a class of 30 when he's always been in classes of 22. So I've seen a huge change at 10 one-on-ones cut this year from one school. On the one hand, you know, I look through the budget and I can't see where cuts would be made. But on the other hand, I know that we're spending $18,000 a student. So where do you see that, how do you see the budget, and what changes do you see that can be made to make the system more efficient so that we're using that money well?
You know, it's a difficult question because we have absolutely no sense of what the governor is going to do with respect to the budget. The basic principle, however, is to keep the cuts away from the classroom as much as possible, which we are trying to do. But I do not think we will ever be able, in Syracuse, in the state, or in this nation, go back to the days when we have class sizes of 18, 19, 20. I think that's a reality we're going to have to embrace for the short term, and start thinking about how can we support teachers so that they have what they need in the classrooms. And many of our classrooms have more than one adult in them. If you walk through the schools, the teachers are not there alone. This is particularly true at the elementary level, relatively true at middle school. High school teachers struggle a little bit more. But we're going to have to do everything we can as a community to rally the state to give us a fair funding formula in New York State to support the schools and the districts that are struggling the most. But I have to be very transparent and say I do not believe in the near future you will see those class sizes again.
I appreciate the sober presentation you gave on the numbers specific to the school district, and you're certainly looking at it in a very objective point of view. What's the reason for the 52% graduation rate? And your the reasons? I mean, just as if you could be.
There are many reasons. If students are not reading on grade level by third grade, for the most part, they're not going to graduate. You can look at our third grade reading levels, our results in the state assessment, and see, I think it's 70% of our students are not at grade level by third grade. They are going to continue to struggle. At the time, from K to three, you're learning to read. From four on, you're reading to learn. It is difficult to read to learn if you haven't learned to read. So we have to do a better job at the primary level. I have appealed to Say Yes to Education to begin working with me on moving, going before even pre-K to start a birth to three-year-old program and working with parents so that they support literacy at 1, 2, 3 years old. And I also have to say that while many students are not on grade level by third grade, we still have to work to move many of them up. And it can be done. It's a lot more difficult, much more costly if they are behind. But I think that giving teachers proper guidance, having a rigorous curriculum, and an infrastructure of support, tutorial programs and so forth, will make a difference. But I think the crux of the problem is that so many of the students are not reading on grade level by 8 years old.
I didn't hear you say anything about Say Yes to Syracuse. How is that incorporated into your system, and isn't that giving us some big success now?
It is, but I just want us all to remember that the teaching and learning is the district's core business, not Say Yes's core business. Say Yes is providing many of the supports that our students need so that they are setting the conditions so that educators can do our job. So, for example, they are making sure we have social and emotional support structures for students, mental health support structures for students. We have additional social workers, additional counselors. All of those things are very helpful. We have health centers in the schools. This is all because of the support and the Say Yes model. However, the academics, we must improve the academic programming of the schools, or else you will not see the success that you should see given the rich supports that Say Yes is providing.
I didn't expect you to come on the left.
Sorry.
Good morning. Most of my anecdotal information comes from the locker room. And a couple of teachers I know feel whiplashed from having to go from one academic program to another academic program as a silver bullet. Where do, like, reading programs fit into what you're talking about? For example, School X gets a successful reading program from Chicago. School Y gets a successful reading program from Dallas because that gets everybody on schedule. And that's what I'm talking about, the program, where it's not training, but it's a system that if you follow the rules will build success.
Well, I think right now the district has a single reading program at the elementary level, although I've only seen it being taught in two schools, and I've visited every one of them. You know, and it's funny when you think about it, but then when you think the district paid $3 million, that's not a laughing matter. And I think it's because of what you said, here comes something else. But I think the greater issue is we think the program is the answer instead of helping teachers become literacy experts and really helping them so that they know how to use the materials. So we're backtracking now, and I've set up four Saturday professional development academies, and I think one is coming up on November 5th, where we are going back with the materials that we've purchased the teachers and giving them training on literacy, not on the program, but on literacy, and then they will be able to discern or to really look and say, okay, these are the materials I need to be successful. But we're buying programs and not providing training, and the programs are sitting on the shelves.
You used a lot of data to show where Syracuse stands, and data tells a story. My concern is that I was involved with a project with the school district looking at Dibble's data, and the data were not always accurate. There were data missing. Two questions. One is, have you been able, among your many other issues that you face, have you been able to look at how data are collected and compiled? But also, have you made an assessment of the value of Dibbles versus other assessment tools?
Yes. Well, first I will say I believe Dibbles data gives us very good, and for those of you who may not be familiar, it is a progress monitoring tool for early literacy. So I believe it is a good tool. I think that when you do not have a research department in a school district, which is something I never heard of until I got here, you have these kinds of issues where there is no real guidance about when you progress monitor, what tool you use, what the expectations are. Some teachers do it, some teachers don't. I don't know what the quality of the data is because I don't know how well teachers were trained to actually use the tool. And for many teachers, because we have not done a lot of training on assessment, they see assessment as an imposition and taken away from instructional time rather than seeing progress monitoring tools can help you to develop great instruction or to help you reteach. We'll tell you where to reteach. So there's a lot of work to be done in first trying to put together a research division for the district, then making sure we have a comprehensive assessment program, not just DIBELS. You know, we need assessments all throughout the district, and then making sure teachers are properly trained on how to use them.
I just want to, sticking with the teachers again, and aside from the issue of tenure and the teachers you already have, I heard you say once that in the district there's not any sort of professional human resources department. Have you looked at the whole hiring process? Because you are able to hire some new people, you know, to fill some key gaps in spite of budget. So has the hiring process changed at all, or are you looking?
No, but it will. We do have, as you know, if you've read the paper, we have several reviews going on. One will be of the human resources department. We don't hire a great deal, and given the layoffs, I expect that we will hire far fewer. I think the key, though, is who we're giving tenure. That's the one thing we can control. So we have to make sure principals are trained and that we don't give tenure because they're a good person and we like them very much, but that it's based on some solid criteria and that we fundamentally believe the individual will go on to add value to the district and to the students that they serve.
This week we read in the Post Standard a fascinating article about the Sandy Creek School District up north and how well they do inclusive education for their students with disabilities, that administrators from Japan came to see what happens at Sandy Creek. I wonder what's your early assessment of how well the district is serving students with disabilities?
And we have a model program throughout the state and the nation, a model inclusion program. And those same visitors from Japan were here at Salem Hyde Elementary, but the Post Standard did not write about that. So we have a great model here.
I have a question about school integration. Is integration still a goal, or are you just have to accept segregation as a fact of life?
Do you mean some of our schools being segregated? The fact that many of the schools are segregated?
And where they live, whether they're in segregated classrooms or integrated classrooms, and are you working on that?
I cannot say that that has been a priority of mine. Much of the segregation, if not all of it, is de facto segregation, as you know. It's interesting you ask me that because most of my career was working on a desegregation lawsuit in Rockford, Illinois. You know, it is very important. We know from all of the studies that students do better when they are in integrated classroom settings. That is extraordinarily important. But we don't have a lot of diversity in the school district itself. I think 12,000 of the students are Black and Latino, and only about 5,000 are white. And as you know, that they're segregated based upon housing patterns for the most part. I think what my focus will be is wherever the students are, whoever they are learning with or sitting next to, that they are learning, because I just can't take on every issue in public education. What is most important to me right now is that they are receiving a high-quality education wherever they sit.
Superintendent, hello, how are you? Good. I commend you on the work you're doing so far, but one of the things you said resonates well. Pre-K and young education is very important. And is there going to be a revamp of your pre-K program? Because at the present time, it seems like if my child lives in a different neighborhood, he does not get to go to pre-K until that school sends him someplace else or something like that. I'm not sure how it works, but I have friends who have grandchildren, because I'm not at that age anymore, my grandmother. And the grandchildren are not able to start sometimes. So how is the pre-K program going to be changing to make sure that we have a universal approach to what's going on?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the full question. Could you get...
I, I, okay. hearing. I want to know how you're going to change the pre-K program to make certain that every child is able to have a universal approach to the start of education.
Well, we have to do a better job at recruiting. Our pre-K seats are not full right now. And that's amazing to me, given the great need in the city. So we are working to figure out how to get more parents to sign up for the pre-K programming. I'm not certain if we have universal pre-K. I'm sorry, I wasn't prepared to answer that question. It's something I'll have to follow up on to see how many seats we actually have and how parents are able to access pre-K. But I can tell you that we have empty seats. The program is not full, and it absolutely should be. We should have waiting lists.
From time to time, we've heard about the value of a consolidated or countywide school system. So thinking it for a moment in the long term, do you see a value in that, consolidation or shared services across the county?
Whether there's value or not, I think it's something we're going to have to consider given the fiscal crisis that we're in. I believe there are nearly 700 school districts in the state. I do not believe each of those districts can sustain themselves anymore, so it's something that we will have to consider.
First, I attended Binghamton as well, so congratulations and best wishes. And my question is, I presume that this is much like turning a ship in the ocean. Do you have a realistic or anticipated time frame for being able to have a realistic impact?
Well, I think it's going to take time just to put basic structures in place. And, you know, people keep saying to me at every forum, so what are you going to do? And are the test scores going up this year? Probably not. And the question is really, what are we going to do? The district does not have very many structures in place to actually turn the Queen Mary around. So we are going to have to put that in place this year. We're working on the curriculum. But I think it's going to take anywhere between 3 and 5 years before you start seeing actual improved student outcomes. I think we'll start seeing graduation rates improve first, but it's going to take time because, as I said, the teachers do not have the resources or the training. The leaders don't have that. They don't have the curriculum guidance. We don't have full supports in terms of tutoring programs, extended day programs that we should have. Once those things are in place, though, you'll start seeing those gains pretty quickly, but it takes time to do that, and I'm trying to be very thoughtful and inclusive. I could ram it down everyone's throats because I know what it takes, and many people know what it takes, but I really want the parents, the teachers, and leaders to be involved so that they buy in and it is sustainable.
Certainly sounds like you have your work cut out for you. My understanding is that good music, art, and physical education programs actually help kids improve academically. Is that the case, and what is the school district's plans?
Did you say physical education?
Yes.
Well, I think physical education is just as critical as all other content areas, and when we start revising and revisiting that curriculum, that will be a critical piece, not just for the physical education programs in and of themselves, but because part of the Say Yes theory of action and framework is to make sure we have healthy students. So it is a key area, and we will start redesigning those programs along with English, math, science, social studies, fine arts.
Mm-hmm. And would you include music and art programs in that realm?
Oh, absolutely. I am a great supporter of the arts, and I believe that students will not understand beautiful things or be able to create beautiful things if they are not exposed to the arts. So I want every school to have a very vibrant art music program.
As a city resident, this is very negative. I'm one who likes to see the glass half full. My question is there a way that we can convince students and principals and central office that we are improving, that we are good, that we can do well, and it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's important to share the data, but I hope that I was clear that I believe we absolutely have the talent to change it around. But the talent in chaos won't move anything. So I am bringing that talent together so that we can design structures that will move the district forward, and people will be able to realize or see the fruit of their very hard work. Because I've been in places where you walk into buildings and people aren't working. The teachers are sitting down, sitting behind the desk. That isn't true here. People are working really hard and not seeing the results. So I believe that what you should take out of here is that we have the talent, not only in the school system, but in this community. We have many, many resources, but we have to pull those resources together in a coherent way. That's what's missing to me, so that we can be successful with all students, because we do send many of our students on to the best colleges and universities. We have outstanding early college high school programs and partnerships with universities, advanced placement courses that the suburbs cannot offer. We offer these in every high school. We have advanced programming in the middle schools. So there are many great programs, but far too many students not performing at level, and we have to focus on that.
You haven't said very much about the reconstruction of school facilities. How is that program going, and are you on schedule?
We are on schedule now. So that can say we have begun work at Fowler, and I'm going to ask Mike to help me here because I get some of the school names mixed up. But all of the school construction is on schedule right now, so that's the good thing. And the mayor and I will begin discussions about phase two, so feel good about that.
Thank you, Superintendent. Oh, one more? Oh, sorry, I missed that hand. And this will be, yep, we've got time for one quick one.
I wonder if I misunderstood two statistics you gave. You seemed to say at one point that we have 12,000 Asian, Latina, and Black.
Black and Latino.
And five?
About 5,000 to 6,000 white.
If I can add, right, that's 17,000 kids in the school.
You also have mixed race and Asian students.
Because where did they go? I mean, we've always had over, as I had 20, I had 8 kids go through these schools, and the population I know has dropped. But
we're still at 21,000. I didn't give you a statistics on mixed race students and on Asian and American Indian students. That would make up the rest of the population.
Okay, because I know there are parents that are running to the private schools away from
our sure. I think our population has remained pretty stable at 21,000 for some years now.
Although I think demographically that the whole younger age cohort is going down. But anyway, all right, one more.
It's for Tony.
Good morning, Superintendent. Very pleased to be here this morning, and hopefully I'll be in other venues that you're in, because I truly believe that you are interested in the welfare of the children. I had a couple questions, but I'm only going to ask one for time's sake, and that is, I'm a business owner here in the city of Syracuse, very much committed to the children in the schools. Actually, I'm a teacher. I taught at Henniger High School for a number of years, and I'm very interested in the association with the small businesses and with the city of Syracuse School District, and how your thoughts are as far as bringing them.
I'm glad you asked that question, because I didn't talk about our multiple pathways project and some of the work we're going to do on that. I believe one of the ways to keep high school students motivated is to redesign high schools into career clusters and work with our business partners to help us design career education programs and engineering, technology, culinary programs, construction programs, whatever students might be interested in. And we need the businesses to provide expertise in curriculum design and then to provide apprenticeships and internships for all high school students. So we will be convening a business roundtable as we begin to expand those career technical education programs at the high school level. And they are not the vocational programs at all of old. We would expect every single high school student to participate in a career cluster of their choice. And we need a vibrant business community who is participating with us in order for this to be successful.
Thank you. Excellent. And I hope this is just the first of many visits to the roundtable. Thanks, Sharon.
Absolutely. Thank you.